himself would target a child or anyone near his daughter's age.
You believe this teenage girl is the killer?
Whitney demanded. Sir, Mackie's time, due to divorce, with his first child is halved, Eve pointed out. He lost the potential of a child. I don't see him targeting the young.
Psychologically, that may be sound enough.
Whitney glanced toward Mira. Yes, it's possible.
But the skill required here is more than considerable.
Yes, sir. Lieutenant Lowenbaum, do you know if Mackie has trained or instructed his daughter in weaponry?
Yes. In fact, I've seen her on the range, dropped by one of her competitions.
Competitions?
Target and combat simulation competitions. Non-lethal weaponry. Mac took her to the range regularly and entered her in competitions. He was proud of how well she did.
Willow Mackie has the training and the skill, Eve prompted.
I wouldn't have said she was good enough to... I haven't seen Willow in a couple of years. Only saw her on the range with Mac a few times and at the one competition.
She was good, he admitted, blew out a breath. She was better than good, and Mac was very proud of her abilities and interest.
But these strikes, it takes better than good.
A couple years of practice, Eve thought, can hone a skill.
What can you tell us about their relationship?
They were always pretty tight. In fact, a couple years back, she pushed to live with him full time. He was considering it, especially after he married Suzanne. Then, after the accident, he wasn't in any shape to raise a teenage girl on his own.
What was his state of mind?
Let me go back a little. I've known Mac for a long time. The last four as his LT. He keeps his head. Or did. He didn't like his ex's husband, but most of that came off as just the usual sort of resentment. He spent as much time with Willow as he could manage. The job can interfere, but he made her a priority. I know she started getting in some trouble at school, and his ex wanted her to go to a therapist. She didn't want to, and Mac backed the kid.
Dr. Mira, could you find out if Willow Mackie did indeed see a therapist?
You saw a change in him after the accident, Eve said to Lowenbaum.
Yeah, no question there. It shattered him. I ordered him to take hardship leave because he wasn't steady. Who would be? I heard some talk about him seeing a lawyer, trying to go after the driver, but he wasn't talking to me much.
Pissed at you?
Yeah, maybe.
Some. We need to talk to Vince Petroni from my unit. They were closest. Mac wasn't the same when he came back on the roll. He'd lost weight, was too often distracted and angry under it. He never came in drunk, but I know he hit the bottle hard off duty for a while. But that stopped. Still, he wasn't solid. He was shaky, and he was pissed. He was coming up on his 20, so I talked to him about either turning in his papers or a reassignment.
Did you push it?
Didn't have to. He said he'd already decided to take his 20 and be done. Have more time with his daughter. Maybe travel some. I tagged him a couple of times after that to see if he wanted to have a brew, grab a meal, but he put me off. I let it go.
I need Petroni brought in.
I'll get him.
If they were close, he may feel some loyalty.
I'll get him, Lowenbaum repeated. I'll make certain he doesn't contact Mac.
Eve nodded.
It's highly possible the suspects have other connections to and communications with the NYPSD. It's imperative we keep this information inside this room. Any indication we have a suspect or are looking for Mackie may cause him to go under, or it may force him into a confrontation. He's killed or encouraged his daughter to kill a police officer.
He won't hesitate to do so again, even knowing the result may be his own termination.
It's highly possible that's his end goal, Mira pointed out. He has nothing to live for once this mission is completed or aborted. If he plans to protect his daughter, the best way to do so is his own death. The killings would be blamed solely on him, and as a minor, she could claim coercion, emotional instability.
Which is why we need to take them quickly, smoothly, and soon. The suspect has an apartment on the 6th floor of a residential building on East 24th. Captain Feeney, I need an EDD team to determine if both suspects are in that apartment. A cop with that much experience would know what to look for.
We can get around that.
Don't happen to own that building, do you? Feeney said to Rourke.
No, Rourke responded, already checking on his PPC. But I do own one across the street that might be helpful.
Lowenbaum, I need a unit. Again, he'll know what to look for.
And we know how to get around that.
Reinecke, Jenkinson, Santiago, Carmichael, you're on takedown. Baxter, Trueheart, you're on data and interviews. Trueheart will soften the mother up, Eve added before Baxter could object.
We're gonna need her cooperation.
Baxter, you're gonna sit hard on Petroni. Put the fear of God into him if necessary. Fuck his loyalty, if any, to Reginald Mackey. I want 3 officers, soft clothes, to check out the minor suspect's school.
School would be over for the day, Lieutenant, Peabody told her.
There may be staff still there, after school shit going on. We may be able to determine if she has any particular hangout. If we can take her outside the apartment, we take her. We're not just taking down serial killers. We're taking down a veteran police officer and his teenage daughter. We need it clean.
We need a warrant to search the mother's residence. Get into the kids' room there.
Consider it done, Whitney told her.
Peabody and I will handle that search before or after the takedown, depending on timing. The mother's residence is on first. Anyone not on takedown, get started now.
One moment.
Tibble rose, tall and lean and, under the control, Eve noted, furious.
I'd like to add to Lieutenant Dallas's statement.
Reginald Mackey served the city and its people for 20 years, but he has broken his oath, his faith, his duty. He is responsible for the death of another police officer and 6 other citizens, 1 a minor. He has done this for his own purposes and has disgraced himself. He has made his own child an accessory at best, a killer at worst.
Knock him down. Take him out. Bring him in.
I would prefer he still be breathing at the end of this operation, but I want no other good cops killed today.
Serve and protect, not just the citizenry, but each other.
Lieutenant Dallas, good work.
Commander, we have work of our own to do to support these who are going out into harm's way.
Eve let out a breath when Tibble walked out with Whitney.
He is pissed.
So am I, Lowenbaum pushed to his feet. I never saw it. You asked me, dead on, who I knew who could make these strikes. Mackey never blipped on my screen.
Let me ask you now. Could he have executed these strikes?
Possibly. He wouldn't have been high on my list, but possibly. The thing is, he's been off my screen for close to a year. I never pushed to see how he was doing. If I had, I might have had a better sense where his head was at.
You said you tagged him.
I didn't push.
Were you pals?
No. Not really. But we were comrades. I was his supervising officer when he broke.
And you did what you could for him. Don't go there, Lowenbaum. If you have to go there, save it for later. Get me a SWAT team. One that knows how to take a suspect of this caliber alive and can keep a lid on it.
On a brisk nod, he left the room.
Feeney, just hold it. Your man's working on something.
I've got something, Rourke corrected, again that might be useful. Can I use the screen there?
Without waiting, he rose, walked over, and interfaced his PPC with the room comp.
Your suspect's building, he began when the image came on. We'll draw in on his apartment. It's apartment 612, according to my data.
Okay.
And my building, just diagonal from the target. We have an unoccupied apartment. Actually, three altogether, but this one on the seventh floor provides a good location to set up. We could do a heat sensor search from there, and potentially set up ears at least, depending on the target shielding.
Do that, Eve said.
How about we add this? Feeney scratched his chin. People move in, move out. We use a small moving van. We get McNabb here, maybe another boy to cart in some boxes or furniture, and our equipment moves in without sending up any flags.
How soon can you have it set up?
15, maybe 20.
Roll it.
Baxter, Trueheart, start compiling data and check with Uniform Carmichael. Start the interview process as soon as we've got some of these people in the house. See if you can get the name of the lawyer Mackie talked to. We need to bring him in. He may be a target.
Protecting a lawyer. Baxter shook his head. What the hell?
Come on, partner. Let's get this started.
With only her takedown team in the room, Eve turned to the screen.
Okay. Here's how I see it going.
Within 30 minutes, as data continued to stream in, Eve had her team in a police van, outfitted not only with body armor but helmets, which meant she had to do the same. While the coat took care of the body armor, the helmet bugged the crap out of her. But a headshot would do worse. Inside the van, on screen, she watched the feed Feeney sent her. She watched McNabb and Callender, looking every bit like a happy couple moving into a new place, haul boxes into Rourke's building.
No heat source in suspect's apartment, Feeney told her.
We're running that from the van for now. They're not in there. When you're ready, McNabb and Callender can run that from inside, and you move off. Your man has a garage about a block away. We'll go in there, sit a while. Lowenbaum's team is moving into position. One of them will use the apartment, two on the roof, and another two in another empty apartment in Rourke's building. See the window of the suspect's apartment?
Yeah. Privacy screened.
I'm gonna hit the mother's place now. Jenkinson, you're in charge here till I get back. Sit tight. Peabody, I want constant reports. Rourke, you're with me. I'll be heading east, then south on foot. I can be back here inside 5 minutes, so I need to know the first sighting on either suspect.
She stepped out of the van, moved fast. The suspects could be back any minute, or not for hours. Any data she could dig up might pinpoint their next target. Even now, they might be holed up in some hotel room, some flop, some empty office space, preparing to strike again.
Nothing fell out of the sky now as the ugly day headed toward a bitter evening. Streetlights shimmered on, cutting the gloom with chilly white pools of light. As she walked, she studied faces. Pedestrians hurrying home, or to meet up for drinks, to get in more shopping. Others huddled at a cart that smelled of soy dogs and really terrible coffee. They could walk here, she thought, father and daughter, back to the apartment, out to grab a slice. They would have walked here at some point, from the townhouse to the apartment. Had they plotted along the way? Who to kill
And when?
A block and a half from Zoe Younger's townhouse, Rourke stepped up beside her.
Lieutenant,
I want to hit the kids' room. Whitney got the warrant for the whole place, but we're going to focus on the girls' room. It's unlikely the rest of this family are involved, or she'd leave handy clues in the living area.
Understood.
When he took her hand, she linked her fingers with his. On duty, yeah, but no cops around to see. We will take a pass at any and all electronics and flag them for EDD. I expect I'll be entirely more useful there than tossing a teenage girl's room.
She frowned up at him as they swam across the sidewalk with the tide of people.
You were a teenage boy. There can't be that much difference between male and female at that age.
Oh, only worlds, I imagine.
With her, he made the turn, walked up the 5 steps to the front right door of the pretty duplex. As he spoke, he took out his tools. Quicker than her master, she thought, eyeing the security.
You were a teenage girl.
Not so much, or only sort of. As I was not so much or only sort of a teenage boy, how well we suit.
They have excellent security, he added, sliding through it like a knife through warmed butter.
We clear it first. Eve drew her weapon, just in case.
After his nod, they went through the door together.
NYPSD, she called out, sweeping left. We've entered the premises, duly warranted.
No one's here. You can feel an empty house, Rourke said.
Ah, there was a day when a B&E into an empty house was my favorite thing. Now you get to do it legally. Not nearly the same.
While she agreed with the empty, she cleared the first level. Living area, kitchen, dining, a home office, and a kind of family entertainment area. The house smelled of the spicy, rust and pumpkin-colored flowers on the dining room table. Some sort of board on the kitchen wall held kid art, weird stick figures, trees with blobs of green representing leaves. A kind of chart that listed duties. Chores, she corrected, like clearing the table, setting it, making beds. Beside the chart, someone had pinned a Christmas photo. Zoe Younger, Lincoln Steuben, Zach Steuben, and Willow Mackey in a group in front of a festive tree, presents stacked beneath. All smiled but Willow, who stared into the camera with hard green eyes and the faintest hint of a smirk.
Arms folded. Eve tapped the picture. There's defiance there.
The boy? He looks happy enough to do handsprings for a few hours, and the parents look happy, content.
Her? That's a fuck you stare.
Indeed it is. And I suspect Mira would add she's separated herself, the folded arms, the bit of distance, while the other three are all touching.
Then again, 15?
It's an age, isn't it, to consider your parents the enemy?
Hard for us to say. The ones we had were the enemy. But, on the surface anyway, it looks like these two work to give happy and stable.
The house is clean, but it's not sterile or perfect. Kid-type cereal box on the counter, a couple dishes in the sink, the boy's skids under a chair in the living area, somebody's sweater on the back of a chair over there.
He glanced over, hadn't noticed.
You're a wonder.
I'm a cop, she corrected. You've got this task chart. Everybody does their share, and that's probably a good thing.
Kids' weird drawings displayed, the family Christmas picture.
She took one more look around. Reads normal, except it isn't. Under the surface, it isn't.
They went upstairs to the second floor, cleared that. The master suite, the attached office, the boys' room,
a minor disaster area with strewn toys, vid games, clothes, a guest room identified as such by its pristine, unlived-in feel, then the girls. And there was a third floor, a kind of casual family area for watching screen, hanging out, which the scatter of games proved they did, with a small kitchenette and a half bath. Eve headed straight back down to Willow's room. Bed, sloppily made, and with none of the fussy pillows or weird stuffed animals Eve had encountered in other teenagers' rooms. A desk and comp under the window, a lounge chair, some shelves. Posters on the walls. Some music group all in black with snarling faces and lots of tats. The rest were weapons, or someone holding weapons. Knives, banned guns, blasters. Clear where her interests are, Eve commented, moving to the closet. A few girly dresses, some with the tags still on them. Most of the clothes ran to black or dark colors, rougher styles. There's an order in here, she observed. She knows where she puts her things, wants everything in its place, and if her mother or her brother poke around in here, she knows it. Rourke had already started on the computer. She has this passcoded and fail-safed. A very intricate job for someone her age. He pulled out the desk chair and sat to work. Eve started on the dresser. Plain underwear, winter socks, sweaters, sweats, all organized without looking overly so. Purposefully, she thought. Yes, she'd know if her mother shifted a pair of socks in the drawer. Keep going on that, but she wouldn't leave anything in here she didn't want her mother to find. You're sure of that? She put a slide lock on the inside of the door. They took it off. Eve nodded toward the door and the telltale marks. Everything in here is arranged in a kind of system. I always did the same. In foster care, in state. You want to know where your things are, so, if necessary, you can grab what matters most, is needed most, and run. Or so you know when they've done the look-through. I'm betting her mother does the regular look-through. Mother swallows the posters, Eve continued as she kept searching. Making the girl take them down only entrenches the interest, drives it deeper under. So she swallows that. But she's had the room painted in this pale, pretty blue, buys dresses that aren't worn unless she forces that issue. She comes in looking for something, anything, to give her more insight into her daughter. Or, more, and, because she's worried she'll find illegals or weapons or a journal full of ugly thoughts. Did you have one? A journal? No. I kept my ugly thoughts to myself because they always... The brother's room. When Eve walked out, Rourke arched his eyebrows. He finished bypassing the failsafe, then rose to see what his cop was up to. She sat at the boy's comp in the middle of his boy mess. I didn't always keep my thoughts, ugly or otherwise, to myself. That's learned behavior. That's experience. Sometimes you're just writing a paper for school, and they get into your comp, and you get punished for writing how you like riding an airboard. So you start doing those papers in school, mostly. Or you're bored and unhappy, and you write down some stupid wish list, and they find that, and you get your ass kicked over it. Rourke brushed a kiss over the top of her head, said nothing, which said everything. It's not about me. It's just about... A couple of times when I needed to write something down, when you just need that tangible act, I figured out how to sort of hide it on another comp, one they didn't bother with. You've got a real kid. I mean, the foster's real kid in the house, and he's gold in their eyes. You can use that. The thing is, if she used that method... She's probably a hell of a lot better at it than I was. Than I am. Let me see. When she rose, he took her by her shoulders, looked into her eyes. What did you need to write down? I kept a calendar, almost always, wherever I was, marking time till I could get out. For good. How many years, months, weeks, days, hours sometimes before I could. How I was gonna get out, go to New York. New York seemed so big and full, so I focused on New York pretty early. And the academy. How I was gonna be a cop, because cops took care of themselves and everyone else. Good cops, anyway. And I was gonna be a good cop, and no one was ever gonna tell me what and when to eat, what to wear, and now I do. She shook her head. Not the same, not close to the same. No one loved me. And maybe along the way, that became my fault as much as the system's, but no one loved me. No one said, eat something, because I love you, because you matter. I was just another number until I earned the badge. I was just a badge, mostly just a badge, until I earned you. She took a breath. I could have been this girl, Rourke.
No.
Yes, or at least something like her. If Feeney had been a different kind of cop, a different kind of man, if he'd been like Mackie, broken and twisted like Mackie. He saw me, really saw me, and he pulled me out of the rest, paid attention, gave me time, gave me him. No one had, ever, offered me what he did. No one ever saw me like he did. I wanted to make him proud of me, wanted to be the kind of cop he'd be proud of. It drove me. And doesn't it look like she wants to be what her father wants? What is part, a big part, of what drives her? If the last part of that's true, it means she's turned her back on everything else she has. A mother, a brother, a good home from the looks of it. Maybe, but looks don't always mean dick. We'll see about that. But perception's truth, right? If nothing else, she perceived no one sees her, gets her, cares about her, not like her father. And she's killing for him. Killing because he's trained her, taught her to see that as her right, or at least as an answer. She shook it off, had to shake it off. It only matters why right now if the why helps us find them, stop them. So yeah, you take a look. Given his age, they probably have parental controls on this unit, but she could have hidden her own files in there. Easily enough. If so, you'll find them. I'm gonna go back to her room. Eve checked in with Peabody. No movement. Then stood in the center of Willow Mackey's bedroom. A good space. Fully triple the size she'd been able to claim at the same age. Nicely, comfortably furnished. The clothes all good quality. No photographs. Not of herself, her family and friends, not even of her father. Maybe some on her computer, Eve thought, and she'd look there. She searched through the three drawers in the desk, found a few school-type supplies. No junk. None of the weird junk teenage girls, and boys for that matter, collected. No discs, she realized. Data or music. No other electronics. No PC. No tablet. Because she carted them with her? 1 week here, 1 week there? Her gaze passed over the posters. Weaponry. Violence. Would a teenager so focused on weapons live every other week without access to any? She stepped back into the closet.
A smallish space with that same sense of organization. The fussy clothes, obviously the mother's pick, in the back. And there, still in their boxes, a pair of heels, a pair of boots. Both clearly, even to her eye, meant to go with the dresses or more stylish pants. And both, she determined, studying the soles, never worn. In the toe of a well-worn boot, she found a little stash of cash. Just a couple hundred, which made Eve feel as if it had been put there deliberately, something her mother could find. In the pocket of a hoodie, she found a notebook, and, engaging it, heard a girl's voice, a shock how young, complaining about her brother, her mother, her stepfather, how they didn't understand her, and on and on. Also, so her mother could find it, Eve thought, bagging it for evidence. They'd listened to all the whines and complaints, but the last entry, at least, had been clearly designed to make her mother feel guilty if she searched and found it. So she wouldn't hide anything important in the closet, Eve determined. Though she didn't believe she'd find anything in usual places, she checked them anyway. She went over the closet floor, the walls, even the ceiling, looked under the bed, between mattresses, checked the cushions of the desk and lounge chairs, under and behind the desk. She judged the dresser too heavy to be moved out without showing scuffs on the floor, but tried it anyway, looked under it, pulled the drawers out, looked under them. As she slid the bottom drawer back into place, the design beneath it caught her eye. A kind of braiding, about 2 inches high, ran along the base. And when she'd slid that drawer in, pulled it out, there'd been the slightest need to tug, and the faintest little click. Nothing that out of the ordinary, but... She took the bottom drawer out again. It was a well-made piece of furniture, sturdy, nicely crafted of engineered wood. The bottom drawer rested on a slab of that wood. Curious, she ran her fingers over the twisted braid of decoration along the base, pushing, prying, felt one twist give, just the tiniest bit. She tugged. Nothing. She kept working along the braid, found another twist give, then a third. She didn't have to tug. The narrow hidden drawers slid out toward her. Empty, she noted. Empty, but for the cushioning foam with cutouts for 2 knives and 2 hand weapons. Blasters by her eye. Another cutout, a rectangle, would easily hold several IDs, maybe more cash, Eve thought. She's not coming back here, she murmured.
I agree, Rourke said from the doorway. You'll want to see this. You were right about using the younger brother's unit. The file I found was cleverly hidden. And even then, he continued as they walked back to the brother's room, she was careful. This isn't a rash or impulsive young girl.
Not even close. Eve studied the first document on screen. It's their hit list. Just initials, not full names, but there's B.M. K.R. Michelson, Russo. There's M.B., and I'm betting on Marta Beck, Michelson's office manager. There's B.F., that's going to be fine, the driver who hit the second wife. One of these others, A.E., J.R., and M.J., is likely the lawyer we haven't identified. And 2 others. 2 down, 5 to go. There's a second page to this document. Rourke ordered it on screen. Zach Steuben, that's her brother. Lincoln Steuben, her stepfather. Christ, her mother's on here. Renee Hutchins, Thomas Greenberg, Linda Track, we need to identify them. And this one with initials. HCHS. It's her high school.
I'm sure of it, as I found this document as well.
Rourke called up a blueprint of Hillary Clinton High School. Certain classrooms, certain areas were highlighted, egresses marked.
Jesus, Jesus! She plans to hit her school!
And already has her nest chosen. Closer this time than the other two attacks, but still an appreciable distance. Eve looked at the next image. The roof of her father's apartment building.
She has these hidden here because this isn't her father's agenda. It's hers. When they finish his mission, she can begin her own.
How hard did you have to look to find this?
A bit of work, but more to the point, I likely wouldn't have found it if I hadn't been specifically looking for it. It was shielded under a perfectly harmless school report on George Washington.
Eve paced. Okay. Let's get back. We need to access Mackie's apartment. It's likely he's got cams set up, is monitoring anyone going in or out of the building, certainly his own space. I can take care of that. Counting on it. We need to get in, see who's next. When and where. They may have moved straight to the next nest, and there are three people on his agenda we haven't ID'd, and we have to ID the unknowns on her list. There's more on hers. She's listed her kills. Animals, he said quickly. The type, the place, the distance, the weapon, the date, the time. It appears her father's taken her hunting, illegally very often, into Montana, Wyoming, Alaska, the Dakotas, even into Mexico, Canada. She's listed over 24 kills in the last 7 months. Copy the file to my units. I'll have EDD pick this up, and hers. Hell, all of them, and now. She'll have a unit at her father's place. We need to get into that. She wouldn't have needed to be so careful on his agenda there, so maybe we'll have names. Eve shoved a hand through her hair. I wonder if Mackie knows what kind of monster he's created. And if he knows, does he care?
9. Eve tagged Peabody, reeled off the names from Willow's list. These people are connected to the suspects, most likely the female. Nail them down, get contact information.
She clicked off, turned to Rourke. If Mackie's monitoring the security cams in the apartment remotely, jamming them will tip him. As they walked, Rourke simply patted her shoulder and contacted Feeney. Though they launched into e-speak that made her head bang, Eve understood enough to interpret. You, or Feeney, can override the cam and replay a loop.
Exactly so. If Mackie's monitoring closely, it won't fool him for long, so we'll want to time it well.
He could have rigged the door, right? He's a cop. He'd think of details.
Rig the door to let him know when anyone goes in, so, darling Eve, this is hardly my first B&E. In fact, how happy am I? It's not even my first of the day. Have a little faith.
The snapping wind had keened to a sharp edge. She caught the scent of soy dogs and chestnuts from a cart, a puff of winter fragrant smoke. Someone's vehicle alarm went off in annoying rapid beeps as a couple of teenage girls ran by giggling like lunatics.
Rourke spoke easily to Feeney. Override in 10, Feeney announced.
Copy that. Take the door, Eve told Rourke.
Unlikely he's got a way to monitor my master, but why take the chance?
And go, Feeney said. They went to the entrance and, with Rourke's clever hands, were smoothly inside in under 6 seconds. No lobby cams, but the standard in the elevator.
We take the stairs, Eve started up.
A decent enough place, she thought. Nothing close to the ex-wife's duplex, but decent. She noticed sporadic soundproofing, catching snippets of sound from apartments as they moved up. But on Mackie's floor, all held quiet.
He bumped up his security. Rourke nodded as they stood out of range of the camera over his apartment door. I've got this one. He took a device from his pocket, keyed in something, studied the readout, added more code. Feeds looped. Let's see what other tricks he has for us. When they approached the door, Rourke used the same device to scan the locks, the security swipe. Clever, he murmured. I'm reading a monitoring system, so you were right to be cautious here. No explosives, so that's a bonus, isn't it? Let me just... Aye, that's it. Each in its time. Yes, clever enough, but... there you are. Hang on to this, will you? He handed Eve the device that hummed quietly in her hand while he took out his tools. She watched him slip around a trio of police locks like they were thumb bolts. Eve handed the device back to him, drew her weapon. No explosives, good. But remember that old vid we watched a couple weeks ago? The guy booby-trapped his place, had a big-ass shotgun rigged to go off if the door opened. Classic vid, he corrected. But I do remember, yes, so why don't we... They stepped to either side of the door. Eve turned the knob, dropped low, shoved the door open from the bottom. No booby trap, no trip wires, no internal cameras. And very little else. She stepped into a living area that held one aging and sagging sofa. You reading this, Feeney? She turned a circle to give him the 360 with her lapel recorder. Yeah, shit. We'll clear it anyway. He'd left his bed, stripped to the mattress. A second bedroom held nothing but accumulated dust and some empty clothes hangers. They left this place weeks ago. Lohenbaum, stand down. They're not coming back here. Peabody, call in the sweepers. They can go over the place for form's sake. To release a bubble of frustration, she kicked the sofa. Copy that, sir, Peabody said. I can give you those names. Give. Renee Hutchins, the school psychologist at the female suspect's high school. Thomas Greenberg, principal at the same school. Linda Track works with Zoe Younger and is Lincoln Steuben's sister. Have them contacted, interviewed, assign protective details. On it. You don't believe they're in immediate danger, Rourke said. No, one mission at a time. Eve hissed out a breath. Rounds out her hit list with two authority figures from her school and her stepfather's sister, who's likely friends with her mother. She took a turn, put the second hit list aside for now, dealt with what was more immediate, the three unknown people on the first list. He figured we'd get here sooner or later. He prepared for that. Left the furniture that was too big and too old to bother with. Carmichael, Santiago, start knocking on doors here. Let's see if anyone can tell us when he booked. She resisted, barely, kicking the sofa again. Okay, all right. No more pussyfooting around. Feeney, will you contact the commander? Give him the status? We're going full release on the IDs. I'm available for a media conference in an hour. Better you than me, kid. Lohenbaum, be available for same. She yanked out her link, started that ball rolling. Nadine. Dallas, I've been trying to reach you all damn day. Everything's pushed to... Where are you? What? I just got home, but I'm coming to you. Which home? My new place. My only place now. What? No cameras. I'm on my way. Rourke studied her cold, angry eyes. Yanking the cork out of the bottle, are we? That's right. What do you need from me? Right now? I could use a ride. In a fraction of the time she could have commandeered a police vehicle, she was sliding behind the wheel of a husky all-terrain. Peabody dropped in beside her. It's big and warm.
It's temporary. Plug in Nadine's address. I don't know where the hell it is.
Oh, it's great. She's still decorating it, but I heard it's already looking mag, and I don't care what it looks like.
Right.
Peabody sat back as the comp cued Eve on direction.
You want Nadine to break the story before you talk to the general media. I want her to fucking explode it.
That'll cut down on the time I have to stand there giving statements, answering stupid questions. More, she'll dig in. There'll be stories and data about the suspects, about the victims. We have targets as yet unidentified, as yet unprotected. A good chance they'll come to us after this. We need more background on the dead wife.
I did more digging while we were waiting. Birth, family, education, employment. Nothing stands out. Pretty stable family. Grew up in Westchester. No trouble in school. 2 years of college, general studies. Worked in retail. Moved to Brooklyn, roomed with a couple of girlfriends, switched jobs. Still retail. Married Mackie, moved again, changed jobs again. Last employment, Boomers, clothing store on East 57th.
She went to the doctor's. Must have been heading back to work after the appointment.
I want to talk to Marta Beck. Find out what went on that day at the appointment. Let's find out the name of her supervisor at work.
Mackie blamed the doctor. And Beck's initials are on the hit list, so he sees her as part of it.
Beck isn't a medical. She's administration.
Exactly. Beck said they often ran behind with appointment times.
Ever been to a doctor that doesn't?
I try to avoid them. So maybe her appointment ran late, and she's rushing. Why else does a sane person run out into the street? If she was rushing back to work, he might target her supervisor or someone at her job. Get me names.
Got that. Oh, and you can park in the underground here. There's a visitor's level.
We're not visitors. The building was sharp and sleek and silver. Not shiny and bright, but aged in a way to lend it character and dignity. She pulled straight up to the lavish front entrance, nosing in behind a limo disgorging a woman inside a massive fur coat carrying a tiny dog, also wearing a fur coat over his skinny dog body. The doorman hustled to the lady with the dog, took a safari's worth of shopping bags from the driver. The doorman glanced toward Eve as she pushed out of the AT, started to speak. He stopped, gave a brisk nod as he juggled bags and hustled back to the door.
Lieutenant Dallas, I'll be right with you.
I don't need you, she said, beating the lady and dog to the door, striding straight through.
Charlie, the woman said, will you just have everything sent up? Mimi is exhausted.
Absolutely, Miss Mannery. Lieutenant?
Nadine first. Expecting me. Leave my vehicle where it is. Eve walked away from him, then realized she didn't have a clue. Ground level soared toward vaulted ceilings where vines twined around white beams. Lights sparkled on white marble floors from huge chandeliers fashioned from twists of that aged silver and balls of rich blue glass. At a scan, she spotted a bank, three boutiques, restaurants, a bakery, and a gourmet food mart, a business center.
Security will clear you right up.
Charlie, the doorman, still buried in shopping bags, hurried up to her.
Miss First Penthouse can be accessed from elevator bank C, any car.
Eve headed to C, past a translucent wall of falling water that fell musically into a narrow pool banked with lush red flowers. Eve stepped into the elevator, scowled when a disembodied voice proclaimed, "Two occupants cleared for Penthouse A. Please enjoy your visit and the rest of your day."
Yeah, because it's been a fucking day at the beach so far.
We know where they're not, so that's something, Peabody muttered as she worked on her PPC.
Okay, got the assistant manager at Boomer's, one Alice Ellison.
Have her brought in, Eve snapped as the elevator doors opened. I want her in protective custody now.
Who?
Nadine demanded, standing in a wide foyer flanked by matching pedestal tables holding blue orchids. Eve had said no cameras, but as usual, Nadine first stood camera ready in a sharp suit of bold red, her streaky blonde hair swept back from her foxy face. Eyes of clever green held Eve's gaze.
Now, Peabody.
Behind Nadine, the living area spread, sparsely furnished as yet, with glossy floors the color of the roasted chestnuts that had scented the street. A wall of windows opened the living space to a wide terrace and a spectacular view of the city.
I don't have much time, Eve began. Nice to see you, too.
Nadine,
not much time, understood. But since you've been dodging me all day, I'd like a little room.
Not dodging you. Dodging media, period. And for a reason. I'm here now because I'm going to be part of a media conference in about an hour. I don't have much room to give.
Got room for coffee while we do this?
God, yes. Follow me.
Nadine moved briskly. Eve noticed she wore house skids with the suit across the living space, through a dining area with a long, slick black table centered with a big glass basket in orchid blue and surrounded by black chairs with blue seat cushions. Into a silver and white kitchen, complete with breakfast nook in a window alcove and a massive center island.
You don't even cook.
I can if I have to. And why not have a fabulous space for catering? It so happens I have Dallas Blend stocked.
What blend?
Don't you even know what you drink? Nadine asked as she slid open a black panel to an auto chef.
Rourke's coffee,
which has several blends. Yours is Dallas.
Huh.
Peabody, can you use that wall screen?
Can do.
Put up the ID photos while we get this coffee.
Nadine's fingers paused on the controls of the auto chef.
You've ID'd the shooters?
Coffee, program coffee, Eve ordered, now fairly desperate for a hit.
Former tactical officer Reginald Mackey and his daughter, Willow Mackey, age 15.
Holy shit!
Nadine yanked open a drawer for a notebook, a recorder.
No recorder, not yet.
Suspects are still at large. Not one to stand on ceremony where coffee was concerned, Eve opened the AC herself when it signaled, took out a white mug of black coffee. They vacated Mackey's known residence. The minor suspect's mother, stepfather, and half-brother are in protective custody.
How did you ID the suspects?
Good police work.
Look, you'll get what I can give you now. You'll get what I can give generally at the media conference.
Eve gulped down coffee, felt her system revive, and paced.
Pictures on screen, Peabody.
Nadine passed Peabody a coffee regular.
You can take notes, Nadine, but no recordings until the official conference.
Quickly, succinctly, Eve outlined what she could, still pacing, still gulping coffee.
You believe Willow Mackey is a willing participant in the killings.
Here's some off the record until I clear it.
Eve waited for Nadine's nod.
I think she's the shooter. And I believe...
Bullshit, she corrected.
I know she has a secondary hit list of her own. For whatever reason... His own physical or emotional state, or the fact he's a twisted, vengeful lunatic. I think Mackey's given his daughter the green.
Why the unconnected strikes? Two people at the ice rink, four at Times Square. Cover?
It looks that way.
But Eve thought it was more, even more callous than that. We believe the suspects have additional targets and will move on them quickly. If they follow pattern, they'll choose a public area, somewhere the target routinely goes or lives or works, and they will take more lives. You want me to get their faces out there. When am I cleared for this? Now. Their names and faces as soon as you can. The other details, I need 20 minutes. The off-the-record stays that way until I clear it. That gives you a leg up on the rest of the media. That leg up comes with a price. Name it. Put up Suzanne, Mackie, Peabody. I want this face, too. I want Mackie to see it every time he turns to the screen. I want him to hear her name, to revisit her life and death. You want to break him. Eyes flat, Eve set the empty mug down. I will break him. One more. The lawyer Mackie hired, he's a potential target, but I've got no name. You could dig there, too. I'll put some people on it. You hit anyone with these initials, J.R. or M.J.